out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 22nd of January, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, we've got another really horrific news story to begin with today. I wish we could find some positive news stories, or more positive news stories. We do get them occasionally. Just seems that there's so much horrific stuff that's going on around us. And it does get reported on in the mainstream media, but then it gets forgotten about. And they don't actually draw any conclusions from it. They don't actually identify the patterns to this behaviour and ways that it can be avoided. That falls to the alternative media. That falls to people like us here at Radio Arian. This news story that I've got today concerns gang rape by Negroes, by Negro juveniles, not by gang members, but by black children. Four juvenile males between the ages of 14 and 12 have been charged with kidnapping and raping a girl. Kabashene Ellis Pinckney, 14, Louis Miller and Joseph James Carter, both 13, and Jaden Glover, 12, were arrested on Wednesday in Newcastle County, Delaware, on first-degree rape and kidnapping charges. And all four of them are black. It's quite a surprise that they actually showed their photographs here, as they are juveniles. That's not something that normally happens. Police say that the four dragged a girl into a home in Bear, a suburban community about 11 miles southwest of Wilmington, on December the 11th and forcibly raped her. A police spokesman told thedailymail.com that the victim was under the age of 18 but could not reveal her specific age due to privacy concerns. So this is also child rape by children, basically. After the assault, Miller and James Carter went on to threaten the victim with a weapon and warn her not to tell anyone what had happened, according to police. Detectives from the Newcastle County Division of Police Family Services Squad launched an investigation and identified the four suspects. After executing search warrants, police said they found further evidence tying the four suspects to the crime, and arrest warrants were obtained. All four were arrested without incident and charged with felony counts of first-degree rape, first-degree kidnapping, first-degree conspiracy, and second-degree unlawful sexual contact, according to police. So this was premeditated. They've been charged with first-degree conspiracy. This wasn't something that just happened. They planned this. They planned on kidnapping this young girl and raping her. It was unclear whether the four had lawyers who could speak on their behalf, and police say that the investigations led them to be concerned that there may be other victims. So this may well not be the first time that this gang of juveniles have kidnapped a girl and raped them. Just remember that they're all under the age of 14. Now that is particularly shocking whether they are white or black. But it is much more likely to happen if they are black, which the majority of people aren't actually aware of. There are biological differences between Caucasians and Negroes which do actually predict this kind of behaviour, and they have been known about for centuries. We're going to go to Negroes in Negroland once again, which I've been using over the last couple of weeks to highlight just how long we have known about this sort of behaviour, for a couple of short quotes about Negro children. And remember, this book was entered into Congress. This was produced for the American government in 1860. This was all above board. This was known by, just known by the government, known by the establishment, that this is the way that Negroes behaved. Yet, due to pressure being put on them, they emancipated them, made them into equal citizens, and in doing so, put all the rest of white America at risk. Now, these two quotes, as I say, are about Negro children. The first one is from Baker's Great Basin of the Nile, page 195. In childhood, I believe the Negro to be in advance in intellectual quickness of the white child of a similar age, but the mind does not expand. It promises fruit, but it does not ripen. And the Negro mind has grown in body, but has not advanced in intellect. The puppy of 3 months old is superior in intellect to a child of the same age, but the mind of the child expands, while that of the dog has arrived at its limit. Now, this is a problem, because the Negro grows faster than whites do. Often you'll get a white woman that is miscegenated with a Negro male, and she will think that her child is a little genius because he is so much more clever than the rest of his class. And this is because Negroes mature faster. They are ready to fend for themselves at a much younger age than whites are. And then, of course, once the Negro gets to 11 or 12, the intellect doesn't develop any further. And the teenager starts getting into trouble and joining gangs and all the rest of it. And the white mother just doesn't know what's happened, because this child was so intelligent and so clever, and now he's actually at the bottom of his class. Well, this is because biologically, this is just a fact of life, that they grow faster than whites do. The next quote comes from St. Charles Levy's Second Visit to the United States, Volume 1. Up to the age of 14, the black children advance as fast as the white. But after that age, unless there be an admixture of white blood, it becomes in most instances extremely difficult to carry them forwards. And there are reports of them being left to fend for themselves from about the age of 1 year old. They're weaned, they can walk by that age. The actual bringing up of Negroes in the family is completely different in Africa to how it is with white families here, where the child requires looking after for a very long time. But then, of course, they continue to advance, they continue to grow in intellect, they continue to become innovative, create things, whereas the Negro just stays at the basic age of about 12 or 13. And again, this is why you find, when you look back at the old reports, the slave owners often would call them a childlike race and would look upon them as if they were children, as if they were children in adults' bodies, which is a very good way to look at it. Well, that's two reports there from 180 years ago, I guess. Now let's have a look at some recent reports. And this comes from Professor J.P. Rushton's book, Race, Evolution and Behaviour. If any of you listeners out there haven't actually read this, then download it and read it. The abridged version is about 50 or 60 pages long. And in the book, he collates together all the information that was scientifically available on race, and compares the white race with the black race with the yellow race, and finds that in most matters, whites come somewhere in the middle. And what he did, he got all the different reports, say all the different reports on IQ, and then averaged them, and all the different reports on measurements, and then averaged them. So it wasn't like he was just cherry picking one study and ignoring all the others. He actually used every study that was available to him. Unfortunately, he is no longer with us, but you can check out some of his speeches at the American Renaissance Conference. They are available on YouTube. And this is what he had to say about the growth of the Negro. Black babies spend the least time in the womb. In America, 51% of black children have been born by week 39 of pregnancy, compared with just 33% of white children. So they actually spend less time in the womb than whites do. In Europe, black babies of even professional mothers are born earlier than white babies. These black babies are not born prematurely. They are born sooner, but biologically, they are more mature. The length of pregnancy depends upon the genes. And often when these black babies are actually born, they can hold their heads up. They've got such strength, such muscle strength in their necks that they can actually hold their heads up. A white baby, you have to be very careful to support the head of the child for quite some time. Whereas the Negro is born as a much tougher kind of being right from birth. Why that would be? Possibly because Negro mothers may be a lot rougher than white mothers. They certainly seem to have, the creation of the Negro certainly seems to have compensated for that. Anyway, if you look at the pictures of them with their actually able to hold their heads up straight away immediately from birth, they look very different to white babies. Not just the colour, obviously. The faster pace of growth among blacks goes on throughout childhood. Black babies have greater muscular strength and can reach for objects better. Their neck muscles are often so developed that they can lift their heads up when they are only 9 hours old. In a matter of days, they can turn themselves over. Black children sit, crawl, walk, and put on their own clothes earlier than whites or Orientals. The findings are measured by such tests as Bailey's Scales of Mental and Motor Development and the Cambridge Neonatal Scales. X-rays show that bones grow faster in black children than in white. Blacks have faster dental development than whites, who mature faster than Orientals. Black children begin the first part of permanent tooth growth at about 5.8 years and finish at 7.6 years. Whites begin at 6.1 years and finish at 7.7 years, while Orientals begin at 6.1 years and finish at 7.8. Blacks have larger jaws and larger teeth. They also have more teeth, and more often than not, also have the third and fourth molars. So they actually have more teeth than whites. They're not the same subspecies as whites are. There isn't just one human race. There is a variety of races, and this can be determined from the physical appearance. And if something looks different to something else, then it very likely is different to something else. And we do find that form and function are intertwined. So if something has a different form, then it's likely to have a different function as well. And psychologically, we find Negroes are very different to whites, just as different as they are in appearance. Blacks reach sexual maturity sooner than whites, who in turn mature sooner than Orientals. This is true for things like age at first menstruation, first sexual experience, and first pregnancy. And this is where the danger comes in when you are teaching black children along with white children. You have blacks that are sexually mature much sooner than the whites. Blacks that have had their testosterone spurt much sooner, so that they've actually got adult bodies, while the young white lads are still there with the bodies of children. This is why we see in London 14, 15-year-old kids getting involved in stabbing each other, and this is why over here in Delaware, there's 12, 13 and 14 year old black children involved in gang rape. It's because they mature faster than whites. Not just because of that, because I don't think if white children were to mature faster, they would be involved in gang rape, but we'll get into the other reasons later on. Sexual maturity in boys also differs by race. By age 11, 60% of black boys have reached the stage of puberty marked by fast penis growth. 2% have already had sex. White boys tend not to reach this stage for another 1.5 years. That is quite some considerable time. You could say that the outliers of that would be 2 years behind the blacks in actually growing. It's a situation ripe for bullying, basically. The female-headed family is not unique to the United States, nor is it the result of the legacy of slavery or inner city decay. And this is referring to the single parent mothers that we see happening in Negro families. It is found in large areas of black Africa. In Africa, the female-headed family is part of an overall social pattern. It consists of early sexual activity, loose emotional ties between spouses, and sexual union, and the procreation of children with many partners. It includes fostering children away from home, even for several years, so mothers remain sexually attractive. Males likewise compete more for females, and fathers are less involved in child rearing. Compared to others in poor countries, African women stop breastfeeding their children early. This allows ovulation to resume, so mothers conceive again, thus producing a higher birth rate. Once a child is about a year old, other children and grandparents do much of the caretaking. As children grow older, they look to older children for basic needs. In black Africa and the black Caribbean, as in the American underclass ghetto, groups of preteens and teenagers are left quite free of adult supervision. So their whole family way of life is entirely different to the white way of family of life. And these people are like adults at the age of 13 or 14. If you think a mature white child could be just like an adult at 16, the same case with a Negro would be when they're the age of 14. And yet here they are in the classroom with white kids that are effectively 2 years younger than them. And they're being expected to sit down and study, which of course they don't want to do because they feel a lot more mature than the white children that are around them. So of course they play up and the standards of education go down in the lessons. Blacks are sexually active at an earlier age than whites. A Los Angeles study found that the age of first sexual activity in high school students was 14 years old for blacks. It's probably about 16 years old for whites. Race differences in sexual behavior have results in real life. They affect sexually transmitted disease rates. The World Health Organization takes note of sexual diseases like syphilis, gonorrhea, herpes, and chlamydia. They report low levels in China and Japan, and high levels in Africa. European countries are in the middle. The racial pattern of these diseases is also true in the United States. The 1997 syphilis rate among blacks was 24 times the white rate. The nationwide syphilis rate for blacks was 22 cases per 100,000 people. It was 0.5 cases per 100,000 for whites, and even lower for Orientals. A recent report found that up to 25% of inner-city girls, mainly black, have chlamydia. One in four black girls have chlamydia, according to that. Data published by the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show that African Americans have HIV rates similar to the black Caribbean and parts of black Africa. 3% of black men and 1% of black women in the US are living with HIV. the rate for white Americans is less than 0.1%, while the rate for Asian Americans is less than 0.05%. Rates for Europe and for the Pacific Rim are also low. Of course, AIDS is a serious public health problem for all racial groups, but it is especially so for Africans and people of African descent. Why might it be that these sexual diseases are so rampant among blacks? Well, it's because they have different sexual patterns to whites. As we heard there earlier, in Africa, they swap partners. They are not monogamous. They're sexually active at a young age. They pass each other around. And that sort of behavior is what we see happening in the West when they live in Western countries, in multicultural countries. We see this just going out and grabbing a woman in some cases. As we learned last week, they don't have a different word for wife, woman, or child, because all the three of them have the same usage. So we shouldn't be surprised when we hear about four young black children kidnapping a girl and raping her. That's just normal traditional behavior for them in Africa. Both male and female sex hormone levels are the highest in blacks. Sex hormones affect not only our bodies, but also the way we act and think. Blacks are the most sexually active, have the most multiple births, and have the most permissive attitudes. Sex diseases are most common in blacks, and the very high rate of AIDS in Africa and the Black Caribbean and in Black America is alarming. Now, when you cross the sexual behaviour and the increased rate of maturity with the low average IQ of the Negro and the vastly increased potential they have for crime, you end up with kids raping kids. We've already talked about the low average IQ last week. In Equatorial New Guinea, the IQ is 59. An IQ of 70 is borderline retarded. Anything under 70 is described as feeble-minded. And that is the majority of African countries. So not only do you have children in bodies that are much older than them, that allow them to force themselves upon white children much easier, but you also have a low IQ, which means that they find it hard to see why they shouldn't be doing something like that. And you also get this vastly increased potential for crime. Now, an increased potential for crime isn't necessarily linked to having a low IQ, because you do get criminals with very high IQs. I'm not saying that having a low IQ means that they are likely to rape or they're likely to commit crimes, but it must play into it, I would have thought. Let's have a look at crimes. In the United States, blacks are less than 13% of the population, but they have 50% of all arrests for assault and murder. So that's roughly four times the amount you would expect them to have. 50% of all arrests for assault and murder in America are blacks, and yet they only make up 13% of the population. They are also responsible for 67% of all arrests for robbery. So that's six or seven times the amount that you would expect them to be arrested for robbery. And if you think this is because of poverty, why is it that more men are in prison and more men are arrested for these things than women? Well, it's not because the establishment is picking on men. It's not because the establishment is anti-men as far as crime is concerned. It's because men are more often likely to commit crimes than women are. And what we have here is that blacks are far more likely to commit crimes than whites are. 50% of all crime victims also report that their assailants are black. So the arrest statistics cannot be due to police bias. Half of all crime victims report their assailants as black. So therefore, if we were not living alongside these blacks, if these blacks had their own areas, their own territories that we were living in, that would do away with half of all the crimes that happen. Half of all the crimes that happen could be stopped simply by having segregation between us. Female homicides tell the same story. In one study of female arrests, 75% were black women. Only 13% were white women. Just think about that. They only make up 13% of the population, yet 75% of all arrests, female arrests, were black women. No Asian women were arrested. The cultural explanation for the crime rate of black men does not apply to black women, who are not expected to engage in criminal behaviour to the same extent. There is no gangster image among black females. This is because they suggest that blacks don't have good role models. That's why they go out and commit crime. Well, if that's the case, then why do these black females commit three quarters of all crimes that females carry out? The same pattern is found in other countries. In London, England, blacks make up 13% of the population, but they account for 50% of the crime rate. A 1996 government commission in Ontario, Canada, reported that blacks were 5 times more likely to go to jail than whites and 10 times more likely than Orientals. The Interpol yearbooks show that this racial pattern is consistent globally. Rates of murder, rape, and serious assault were 4 times higher in African and Caribbean countries than in Asian or Pacific Rim countries. European countries were intermediate. This is the reason why there are more blacks in prison than there are their percentage in the population. It's because they're far more likely to commit crimes. And when you combine that with far higher sexual impulses than whites get, far more promiscuous people just by their nature, combined with growing much faster than whites do, and gang raping the other children becomes something that you would actually expect to happen among these people, especially when there are reports of it from 200 years ago. We've spent 200 years trying to educate and civilize these people. We've told everybody else that all the white people, that the only reason that the blacks are like this is because we're being racist to them. We've had affirmative action. We've had diversity quotas. We've put white kids in the schools with them because for some bizarre reason they thought that if the white kids were there, that would improve their exam results. None of this has worked. None of this has worked. They're still raping, killing, massacring one another at far higher rates than they were 100 years ago. And to make matters worse, countries that never even had a slave population in Europe, countries like Britain, have imported these people into our countries where, as I say, entirely predictably, they have carried on this behaviour in our countries, and they've ruined our capital city, particularly London. 60% non-white, stabbings every day, acid attacks every day, gang rapes every day. All of this behaviour could be prevented. 50% of all crime is carried out by blacks. Simply remove the blacks and you remove 50% of the crime. And all those people that have been victims of black crime, especially in Britain, over the last 60 years, all of those crimes are at the hands of the politicians that brought them into our country, because this is the way they behave. We can't blame the blacks for behaving like this. It's in their nature to behave like this. They were created like this. We're obviously meant to be separate to them, because if we're not separate to them, we will interbreed with them. If we interbreed with them, our own race will go extinct. So we're obviously not meant to be living with them. We find them unattractive for a purpose, because if we were to interbreed with them, we would go extinct. So it's quite natural to find them unattractive, and yet nowadays we even punish people for saying that, when it's just an obvious instinct. It's just nature. And the longer we go with allowing them to live with us and living alongside them, the more of these gang rapes there are going to occur, the more often it's going to be white children instead of blacks that they're raping, and the more interbreeding is going to be going on that makes it even harder for us to eventually separate. One day we will have to separate, because if we don't, we're going to go extinct. And the point of these podcasts is to give you listeners ammunition that you can use when you are discussing these subjects with people, so you can wake them up to what's really going on. And then when we have enough of us that have woken up, then we can start to make changes. We just need people in the establishment to understand these things. And then they'll have to make a choice. I either follow the truth or follow a lie. And it takes courage to follow the truth. It takes courage to listen to Radio Area, not just to produce it, but to listen to it. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the podcast today. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.